Great. We can have the light back. Thank you. So perhaps like the Met, performances at Gladstone Gallery would benefit from surtitles or subtitles. Despite the cherubic voices, it's not always possible to pick up all of the nuance of what these trebles are, what the trouble is with the trebles, as it were, with what they have to sing. But we get, I must say that when one's in the gallery, by the way, how many of you actually experienced one of the performances there in the gallery? That's cool, that's good, but that's a smallish percentage. I would hope that as a result of whatever the verdict of this evening's discussion, there would be a stimulation to go and check that out. Just out of curiosity, how many of you saw the show but didn't hear a performance? Right, yeah. That's a very different experience of this enterprise than seeing the performance. But there are lines that resonated. The artists, the duo, culled insults and barbs from literature, going right back to Cicero, I think. And lines that I heard and that resonated with me included, you have all the characteristics of a dog, except fidelity. And you're a man with one idea, a bad idea, which is an unfortunate spin on the dichotomy of the duality or the dichotomy of the fox and the hedgehog, to be, have the worst of each. I mean, the worst of the hedgehog and the worst of the fox, as it were, to have only one idea, and it's not a good one. Ideas and realization. This is almost, isn't it, Alex? Could almost be, couldn't it, this show, the dilemmas of conceptual art as we know it, that you have really interesting things going on, but you need some program notes to connect them, would you say?
I think you need program notes for most art. Certainly you needed program notes for most art produced before a certain date, let's say 1800. But I would say all the way through, you probably needed program notes. And for this show, you don't need that many. Just a few indications about what's going on, and then you look and listen and make of it what you will. So I don't think of it as its dilemmas as particular to conceptual art. I've never really understood what conceptual art is, I guess I should confess. Most art to me that's worthwhile has a conceptual dimension. I consider Michelangelo a highly conceptual artist. So I never understood that distinction very well, although I know that people were very exercised about it around about 1970. I think that's all I want to say about conceptual art.
Yeah, don't worry about the conceptual art. Let's give us a characterization of... Actually, just for those, because there's quite a swathe of the audience that hasn't experienced the show with or without the boy soprano. So let's get from you, if we could, just a good, quick description of what are the components of the show, and then a verdict from you as to how they come together.
Okay. So I went twice to this show, and both times I got time in the galleries wandering around these blocks of marble that were rough on some edges, very smooth on other edges, that were joined almost. One imagines they were once together but have been cut very precisely at an angle. And the first thing I noticed about them was how uncannily artificial they looked. They really, one of them looks like marbled paper, and no matter how close you get to it, it feels like marbled paper. So they had a kind of unreal quality, and yet it's a blue chip gallery. These are famous artists, I guess, now. One knows at some level that this is the real thing. These are marble platforms or blocks. And then you notice people start gathering in the gallery because they know that something's supposed to happen at a certain hour, and two kids come in. and take up position in and among the stones. I think you saw that pretty well in the video and in the photos. And they start singing. Now, on the music, I feel very ill-equipped to judge what the music was like, but to amateur ears like mine, it sounded modern, but very much based in traditional methods of polyphony. And it seemed clear that what was happening inside the music was a kind of handling of dissonance with moments of harmony that had some relation to the content of what was being said. I'll also say or confess that I knew that there were insults being traded and that these were, as it were, borrowed insults from earlier times, I guess up to recent times. But I couldn't make many of them out. And that seems important to the piece. Whatever assessment you make of the piece has to allow that a certain amount of sheer musical beauty is part of it, whether you understand the words or not.
So Dorothy, if I could ask you to characterize for us what the artist's intentions in terms of the fissures that they, the fissures and the breaks and the tensions that they would like us to experience between the with the voices, with the stones, etc.
Well, I guess seeing these clips that you have here and the stills, I really felt that the piece looked much better here because there was nobody in the gallery in these pictures, and my experience of the show was on a crowded Saturday, and I couldn't see the kids really very well, and I felt sort of like a cow, like being moved through the space, following these voices. I couldn't see them climbing, and these poses actually were striking, and it felt kind of like a cathedral. It sounded sort of like a sort of church sound in this here, and I felt like the problem between the idea and the execution was very acute in my experience of the show, and I have a post-it, and I felt that there was so much rhetoric that accompanied the press release about, that we're taking a piece of time out of these rocks, and, Alexis, my partner, and I went to the Grand Canyon earlier this year, and, seeing stones like that are so old in their context was so moving to me that to think of an artist just thinking, like, I'm going to take these out and put them in a gallery at much cost really irritated me.
Okay, good. Let's get one's peeves on the table.
Sorry, I did.
No,
just
absolutely.
In case I forgot.
Yes. But, Rob, I guess this is what I was alluding to in my first question to Alex. It would have been better instead of clumsily saying conceptual art, which is a rather rudimentary shorthand for contemporary art, where there is an idea that seems to be autonomous of the objects of its execution, its elements, its formal elements, and that one needs some intellectual packaging in order to help bridge that gap, which is certainly not a fair or flattering thing to say about the achievements of classical, capital C, conceptual art, 60s and 70s, but just what one would have been more elegant is just to say contemporary art where that's needed for that reason. But their program is pretty fascinating. If you can wade your way through the rather pretentiously critically theoretical press release, the actual ideas that Alora and Caldazia have regarding tensions in the rock, the voice that's about to break, the insults, are they rich or are they sophomoric? Where do you go with the ideas here?
I think maybe hooey is the best word. I have a whole category, it's very conceptualism, of which there's an enormous amount these days. I think conceptualism is actually a very interesting and vital genre of contemporary art ongoing. I think the best point of reference is still Solowitz's Sentences and Paragraphs on Conceptual Art. And the emphasis on the paragraphs is, excuse me, on the sentences is a rigor of execution, which this lacked utterly. I think it was borrowed and ill-conceived. It was sort of slant step from Bruce Nauman, a little bit of Scott Burton, a little bit of, I'm just forgetting now, the person who did the Talis piece.
Cardiff.
Yeah, Johnny Cardiff. A little bit of that, a little bit of this, a little bit. I also felt badly for the boys. I was a boy soprano when I was of an age to have such a voice. I sang with the Chicago Lyric Opera and the Symphony, and I was amazed by the self-possession of these young guys, and I thought their singing was very, very good. Their diction was terrible, and the singing of those complicated lines in a space where the echo by itself would defeat even the best singer means that basically you have to take everything on faith. And conceptual art cannot work on that basis. Actually, it should not be necessary to caption anything this heavily as an art experience. And I don't disagree with the statement about, ideas are part of art from a long time and you have to read and learn. But the primary experience of art should not be a game of bait and switch, which this basically was.
Yeah, well, I studied singing as a boy, a young man, and I thought, yes, diction was terrible. I'd say that you are right about the acoustic, because I did, in person, manage to hear with one or two boys quite clearly what they were singing, but several were. But look, I think it's also the music. But I do think, I would say it's rather lovely, whatever one's feelings about these artists and this project, I think it's... I think there's a big plus to be written for somebody who's commissioning a piece of music for boy sopranos that's not ecclesiastical. And so I think whatever else happens, a big cap in their, a feather in their cap for that to these artists. But then again, yeah, there are some peeves. But Alex, you don't seem to have... we haven't heard peeves from you yet. Did you find this a satisfying experience?
Well, peeves. I guess you won't hear many peeves from me tonight. I might be here under false pretenses.
You don't have to peeve.
I'm not an art critic. I think I tried to write art criticism for a couple of years, about 20 years ago, for Art News, and I was pretty bad at it, and I think they thought I was pretty bad at it, too. And so I don't actually know how to do art criticism. There won't be any verdicts for me. So I'll just confess that I go to contemporary art to have a sharp disjunction from the rest of my experience of life. And all four of these shows provided that in spades. And I go to it selfishly. I go to it to think with it. Whether or not those thoughts are in the work or germane to the work, I don't really care. And in this piece, what I was thinking about was boyhood. I was thinking about that particular juncture of boyhood that is the kind of fulcrum of this piece. I mean, whether you like it or not, that's what it is. How could I help but think of it in those terms, given those boys there, and also given the fact that I had just seen the movie Boyhood, which made a big impact on me. The second time I saw this show, I noticed both boys, there was a photo of one of them that showed this very well, were hunched. They were hunched, well, I'm pretty hunched right now, but they were much more hunched than I am normally when I'm not hunching over a microphone. And in the movie Boyhood, right around that age, you'll notice there's a kind of hunted look about this kid who's trying to figure himself out and is getting told what to do all the time. So it made me think of that. It made me think of a recent book by Niobe Way, a very well-documented book about boyhood and manhood, the kinds of friendships that occur between boys up to this threshold. This is exactly the threshold that she's talking about in her book. She shows that up to that age, the friendships among boys are intimate. Affectionate. A lot of affect is there, a lot of expression of love is there. And she documents quite abundantly, it's a very convincing book, that after that point, when they learn to be men, they become isolated from one another and have a very different set of relations to other men and to the rest of the world. And so this piece showed the boys at that age, as it were, learning the lines of, it's a kind of proleptic piece, learning these adult lines of vituperation and ridicule. So whether or not that's an accurate interpretation of the piece, I couldn't help but think of it in those terms. The fact about learning the lines, the disjunction between these kids and what was coming out of their mouths, seems to me also very typical of that age. These are kids trying to figure out their own identities and trying on identities one after the other. So that seems very natural. And if I wanted to really develop that view of the show, I would probably try to say something about the rocks looking artificial, but I'm not sure I would. Does that mean I like the show? I don't know. There are things about it, I guess, that irritated me. But if I'm able to think all those thoughts in the presence of that show, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, to have that level of intellectual engagement is a sign of some degree of considerable degree of success. Dorothy, were you able to transcend your peeves and have any fraction of the experiences that Alex was having there?
The voices of the boys, which I heard kind of over the heads of, without seeing them, over the heads of people, I thought were very beautiful, and
You should have just jumped up on one of the rocks. There were plenty of vacant rocks.
No, that you weren't allowed.
Ah, all
yeah,
right,
okay. Yeah, because I asked. I liked that they hired, in the case when I saw it, there were boys that were from nearby, and I thought that was kind of good that they didn't, fly kids in from, L.A. or wherever to sing these songs, but...
Or the Vienna's Boy Choir.
Yeah. So that was, I liked that.
A bigger
that.
Budget, then.
Right, I don't know if the boys were paid, actually. That's a good question. I did feel sorry for them, as Rob said, a little bit, because it seemed so hard to even, to think of singing what they were singing, and then seeing, a sea of people that they have to somehow find their way through to get to a rock in the other room. I guess it gave me a certain amount of anxiety on their behalf, thinking of...
I spoke to a father of one of the boys, he said that... The kids were particularly delighted to be able to sing in their chosen clothes, the kind of clothes they wear on the street, not have to wear those chalices and whatever, those surplices, and their flowing robes. Rob, I'd like to challenge you on one thing you were saying, though, or one thing you were implying, and that is that because there are elements in this project that recalled for you other artists, for instance, the way the rocks are cut, put you in mind of Scott Burton, or the fact that there is polyphonic music being used, put you in mind of Janet Cardiff, etc. Jerry Saltz, in a review of this show, blasted him for being completely derivative of Tino Segal, for the reason that in one quarter of Tino Segal's work called Progress, you're accompanied on the ramp at the Guggenheim by a boy of roughly the same age as the boys in this performance. This seems to me, obviously you're not here to defend Jerry, but just defending what you've said yourself, it seems to me actually a curious approach, because the formal elements that you're describing there, or the strategic elements, there are only a finite number of elements in the universe, so obviously sound is going to be used by more than one artist, stones are going to be used by more than an artist. I don't think any of the artists you mentioned there, Cardiff or... Burton, really relate to this project at all?
Obviously, the intelligent use of precedent, sometimes precedent absorbed without conscious absorption, is what makes traditions. And there can be and are traditions of contemporary and modern art. But this is so self-conscious, and it is so strategic, and everything I've seen of theirs is like this. The piece they did in Venice was awful. And I just am tired of giving them the benefit of the doubt. I don't give them the benefit of the doubt. I thought they had some marvelous boy singers, although if you go to churches and synagogues around New York, you can actually hear people singing things you can read in the liturgies. This just seemed very pretentious on the artist's part and a kind of misuse of the talents of some young, good musical artists. And it became clearly a talking piece for the art world. It is not all that much a piece for the general public. So Alex made an interesting thing out of it. I wish I had had him with me. I wish we could have discussed this. I think he is a kinder and more charitable person than I had become. But I still think it's bad art. So.
But I still think that, I mean, we all know about art that references other art, but I would question whether anybody would go in and maybe Scott Burton, I can see like 5%, but certainly not Janet Cardiff. I mean, why does Janet Cardiff doesn't have a monopoly on music?
No.
I don't think Scott Burton has a monopoly on shaped stone. I mean, I don't think that they are referencing Scott Burton, actually. I think you might remember, you might think of Scott Burton, but I don't think it's not a quote in the way, for instance,
but academic art of any period is defined by the sort of easy referentiality, the familiarity, and the seeming to do something out of that common knowledge. And I see them as being purely academic conceptualism.
That very well may be, but I don't think, for instance, in the show we're going to talk about next, Zama's making very, very explicit, is basing the work on reference. But the status of, for instance, the Joseph Beuys-like figure with the blanket over his head in Zama is not of the same category as your suggested link between their stone forms and Scott Burton's chairs. Would you accept that?
No.
No, he wouldn't. I think it's just a question of logic. It's not a question of opinion. I think it's a question of logic, that there's a different level of... Yours is a subjective response to a shaping of a material, and Zama, what Zama's doing is making an iconographical overt reference. Alex, would you back me up on this distinction?
On which point?
On the point that... on the point that Alora and Calzia are not referencing Scott Burton as explicit in the same category of reference as Zama references Beuys or Picard.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a really interesting and fantastically complex question right now, because we live in an era of retrospective art. All four of these shows have distinct moments of retrospection embedded in them. And that means that we not only have lots of art that's looking to the past in one way or another, but we actually have different kinds of retrospection happening in the art. And I was trying on the way over here to think of a kind of scale by which we might measure the four shows. Again, not evaluatively, but simply analytically. Sort of kinds of retrospection do we see in each of the shows? And there's no question that Zama has the most. He has retrospection at the level of motif. There are things that look Dadaist and look surrealist here. There are retrospections at the level of reference. Duchamp is actually one of the personages in the film. There's retrospection at the level of text. There are quoted texts. There's retrospection at the level of technique or mode, silent film. That's a lot of different kinds of retrospection. Allure and Calzadilla have very little. They have the texts, which are excerpted from Cicero to Shakespeare and beyond, so I'm told. And then they have this other level that I think you're referring to, which to me isn't retrospection. That is, being in an art context, there's always going to be a kind of positioning in relation to other art that's being made and that has been made recently. That to me is the space of art. So I think that means I agree with you, David.
Right. Okay.
Can I say
Dorothy?
I found myself thinking about Gilbert and George during this and Underneath the Arches. And
this is the performance where they paint their faces gold and stand on a table and sing a music hall number.
And because, you know, modern technology, you can actually look on YouTube and see them singing this. And I was like, why did I feel so differently about... I had the opportunity of seeing the 15th anniversary at the Sonneben Gallery, which was 1986. And I felt a joy watching this, and even when they were interviewed about the piece, because it's been going on forever, really, they said something that struck me about this show, which is, they said when they started making art in the late 60s, a lot of artists were falling in love with art, and we felt this was wrong and self-centered. We fell in love with the viewer. And as far as this show, I felt like, well, they aren't in love with the viewer here, because it just depends on when you see the piece, what your experience is. You know, there's too much kind of left up to chance, I think.
I'm not sure how much love I want from Gilbert and George, but yes, that's an interesting point. Yeah.
It just seemed that, you know, it was an interesting point for a performer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's a good perception. I think because we've already actually begun to segue into our discussion on Zama, I think it would be a good idea. And in fact, I'm just going to go there because